Hello, and welcome back to the Klaviyo Data Science Podcast. If this is your first time joining us, I hope you enjoy your stay. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Zach.
One of the most interesting and challenging times to be a data scientist is when the world changes. I don't just mean events like earthquakes or pandemics when I say that, though obviously those are times that the earth changes. When your lifeblood is data, the world changing can look like a few lines of code in a widely used piece of software. If it impacts your ability to get the data that you need to do your job and to deliver value to your customers, that can spell a crisis in the world of data science. And every crisis, every world-changing event is different. So in this episode, we're not going to attempt to give a single blueprint for how to respond to every impactful change. Instead, we're going to focus on one specific instance, the release of the iOS 15 privacy changes, and go through that event in depth. You'll hear about the process of discovering, assessing, and responding to fundamental changes in your data in a time-sensitive setting from experts who had to do exactly that not long ago. We've brought on several members of the team at Klaviyo who were central to Klaviyo's iOS 15 response in their own way. Let's start with introductions for all of you. Who are you? What team are you on? And what do you do at Klaviyo? Let's go ahead and start with Trisha.
Hey folks, I'm Trisha. I'm a senior product manager on the reporting team at Klaviyo. So very interested to be part of this podcast since Nader and I had a lot of customer conversations related to this topic.
Very nice. Welcome to the podcast. Nader, you're up next.
How's it going? My name is Nader Fatui. I'm a lead product manager here at Klaviyo on the email platform side. So that encompasses our email sending and our deliverability and compliance teams. Similarly to Trisha, interested to hear from others' experiences and to share more from what we did around iOS 15.
Awesome. Next up, Christina.
Hi, I'm Christina. I've been on the podcast a few times, not for a while though. And I lead up what's called the intelligence pillar at Klaviyo. We are the group of engineering teams who are responsible for shipping all of our customer-facing data features. So anything from reporting and understanding your data to A/B testing and experimenting with what's going on with your customers.
Very nice. Next up, Tom.
Hi, I'm Tom, a senior data scientist here at Klaviyo. I work on the predictive analytics pod, where, among other things, we're responsible for our customer lifetime value models, other predicted attributes about customers, volume warnings, and guided warming as well.
Very nice. And last up, Akshay.
Hey, I'm Akshay, and I'm a machine learning engineer on the predictive analytics team.
Very nice. Welcome to the podcast. It's good to have all of you on today, and I'm excited to dive into this topic in depth. I'd like to start off, it makes perfect sense to me, and I would imagine it makes perfect sense to all of us in this call, why I introduced iOS 15 with so much gravity and fanfare. But while that's true, I imagine a large portion of our audience isn't on board yet. They don't know exactly why we're so concerned with an update to your iPhone system. I want to skip a little bit ahead in this oral history and clue them in on why we're making such a big deal about this. What is iOS 15 and why did it matter for Klaviyo?
So I'm happy to take that one. Yeah, so iOS 15 was first announced in June of 2021 at Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference. It's one of the major version upgrades to iOS, no different than any other time iOS's operating system updates, except this one came with a series of features that would affect email marketing, features that were aimed at protecting user privacy was the way Apple positioned these to the market. So I'll go through one by one on these features and give a quick summary. First one was, and this is kind of the most impactful one for us, is mail privacy protection. It's a feature that's aimed at preventing advertisers and other email senders from using pixels to collect information on users to whom they send messages. Email senders lose transparency on when users open their emails, specifically on Apple devices using the Mail app, and user IP addresses are masked behind Apple's range of IP addresses for these events as well, such that email opens are not easily linked to other online activity or able to be used to determine user location. Get more into the intricacies on kind of what mail privacy protection meant for us, I'm sure, as we kind of proceed in the discussion. The next feature was Private Relay. This is an iCloud Plus feature, which applies when users are browsing in Safari. Essentially, similar deal. The user's IP is anonymized, allowing for generic user location information at the region level, but not having IPs correspond to actual user geolocation. And these users' web requests are encrypted such that users are effectively forwarded to their web browsing destination rather than the host of the website getting that user's location information or anything else from Apple. So this separation of information basically means that nobody, meaning the network provider, website host, even Apple, should be able to identify who a user is and tie their web activity to that profile. So that was Private Relay. And then the last one is Hide My Email. This is another iCloud Plus feature aimed at protecting user privacy. When users are browsing the web in Safari and are prompted to put in an email address, Hide My Email enables them to create an anonymous forwarding address such that third parties, you know, brands, other websites are not able to get access to their true email address. Users can choose to do this for as many websites as they'd like, creating a one-to-many relationship between these users and their email profiles. And as you can imagine, this also creates a headache for marketers in trying to tie this identity back to the profile they thought they were messaging. So the e-commerce use case kind of becomes complicated both for advertisers and users with the Hide My Email feature. We'll discuss that a little more, I'm sure, as we proceed through our chat.
Now, that's a lot. And obviously, we didn't know all of this starting off. So, Tricia and Nader, what were the early days like when iOS 15 first popped on our radar? What did we know and what did we have yet to learn?
I would say that, at least from my standpoint, there was some slight panic initially. We wanted to figure out what this meant, and there was a beta that we could plug into to enroll some devices in iOS 15 and start playing around with them to see what these changes individually meant. Biggest takeaway for me, at least at a high level, was that we took our time and devoted a bunch of cycles to understanding exactly what was happening across these three feature sets that Apple was releasing. And then most importantly, and Tricia was huge here as well, most importantly was interviewing our customers to get a pulse of their understanding of the changes and understanding basically with these changes in mind what they expected to see from Klaviyo. And I'll throw it over to Tricia to get her thoughts as well.
Yeah, I think you summed it up really well, Nader. I think one other thing to keep in mind was that this announcement was on the heels of iOS 14. So there was a lot of customer discussion that we had to have as customers were already dealing with kind of the impacts to their social media conversions, especially with Facebook. And then on top of it, having the news that, hey, maybe email isn't really accurate either. We had to do a lot of work to kind of understand their mental model as they were thinking about all the successive iOS changes and what that really meant to their marketing overall. So to Nader's point, it was a lot of technical investigation on our side to determine what we could and could not surface to customers, but also really listening to customers and thinking about, you know, how are they thinking about their overall marketing strategy and how are all these pieces connected together? Did I miss out anything there, Nader?
No, that ties it all together for me.
Overall, I would say, based on those answers, it sounds like there was a lot of uncertainty, both on our end and on customers' end. Was there anything that was either especially uncertain or especially impactful that it was as uncertain as it was?
I think from my standpoint, the biggest uncertainty, and I think this is kind of true with any kind of systemic change in the ecosystem, biggest uncertainty was what other providers and our kind of competitive landscape would be doing in response to this. So in our initial kind of, as we're doing our research, we looked around and kept kind of a pulse on what the competitive landscape was looking like. Some folks were doing nothing. Others were going so far as to, you know, buy domain names, implying that email opens are dead forever. And, you know, it's just a very large range of responses to something that, you know, as cataclysmic as this is, that's kind of to be expected. We looked at a ton of solutions, I'll be honest. Like, we had good reasons to vet every possible way to approach this. And the kind of core concepts we kept coming back to as far as requirements based on the customers we chatted with were the customers wanted to know which opens were coming from Apple and were Apple privacy generated. They wanted to be able to segment on this information, so knowing which of their customers had made Apple privacy opens and which hadn't. They wanted to be able to control, and this is kind of more skewing towards the very savvy marketing heavy customers, they wanted to be able to control whether or not Apple privacy opens counted within attribution for their marketing program. And the other thing that we kept coming back to, and I think Tricia was a really strong advocate for this, given her experience on the reporting side, we wanted to make sure that we weren't unduly alarming or confusing customers for whom the intricacies of open-driven attribution and machine-driven opens really didn't matter to their marketing program. That was a segment that I think we knew existed, but we didn't know quite how big that was until we started really digging in and doing the research here. Is there anything that I missed there, Tricia?
No, I think you covered the main points, Nader. And similarly, just to echo what Nader said, I think the two biggest open questions for me is we weren't sure if we could actually expose meaningful data about Apple privacy opens until we were fairly further along in the investigation, especially with our ecosystem partners. So I think there was one side for us really trying to get a better grasp of what data we could actually produce that was a positive signal for our customers about the Apple changes. And I think on the other side, to Nader's point, we did have a big open question as to, you know, whether open rates were really as relevant anymore as they were previously. I mean, everybody knows that's a core email KPI, but as Nader suggested, there were some other platforms that were really just pivoting away from that altogether. And we had to really make a decision based on the customer feedback that we had as to whether that made sense for Klaviyo or if we could take a more nuanced approach. So ultimately, based on the customer feedback, as Nader mentioned, we did take a more nuanced approach with providing a lot more flexibility. But there was a lot of internal grappling as to whether we should have a one-size-fits-all solution or whether we should introduce that layer of customization for everyone.
Nader, you brought up an interesting weirdness that you encountered with the data when you're investigating iOS 15. This is a data science podcast, so I have to ask you to bring it up. What was weird about the iOS 15 data?
Yeah, for sure. So there were definitely a few things that stood out and that have stayed kind of consistent since the beta period, a few things that have changed. One thing that's been consistent kind of throughout is that all of these opens that came from Mail Privacy Protection came in with the user agent string Mozilla/5.0, and that's it. So that being a consistent indicator, I think was very much intentional by Apple and made it kind of possible for us to be somewhat confident with the opens that we were ingesting being truly kind of Apple privacy generated. We were also working with our ecosystem partners throughout this, so SendGrid and SparkPost on the email sending side, to better understand kind of what they were doing in light of this change. And because our, I won't bore everyone with how our event kind of taxonomy is set up on the email event side, but we basically were able to start looking for a flag from SendGrid and SparkPost that would indicate whether or not one of these opens was driven from a mail privacy protection enabled device. So the tough part for us was figuring out, all right, now that we know how to identify these, how do we surface these to customers? How do we present this to them in a way that is kind of ingestible? The other kind of weirdness, to get back to your question, Zach, around the data was, you know, location data, as I mentioned before, was obfuscated. So IP geolocation would resolve to the correct country that the user was in, but city and state were obscured. And there were even times in our testing where time zone would be different based on IP geolocation. So that starts to impact features like recipient local time zone sending, smart send time. And we also noticed in our testing, and we corroborated this with folks on the SendGrid side, was that our Apple privacy opens were most likely to be generated when an iOS device was plugged in and or on Wi-Fi, just because those are the times when, depending on the, and yeah, this was, it was fun to try and figure out these nuances, but basically those were the times when the devices were going to be pulling in new messages, fetching any messages that were sent into the Mail app's inbox and firing those pixels to generate those opens. And then we also noticed that some recipients had many Apple privacy open events for a single email. And in our testing, this was independent of whether or not that user actually opened the message. Even in my testing to make sure that the behavior was still consistent ahead of recording this, we had a few campaigns where three Apple privacy opens were generated without a single email being opened. So there is still some weirdness with the data, but we at least kind of understand it and know better what to expect now.
I sense that you've spent some time just poking around with various Apple devices and sending emails and receiving emails and opening emails. And that sounds like fun. So
very much so.
We talked about this before the episode, and one of the big problems that you brought up was attribution. I'd love to hear some more about the complexities that iOS 15 introduced to the idea of attribution. And, you know, did we know how to solve these right away?
Yeah, so we knew that machine opens or the Apple privacy generated opens would begin claiming attribution automatically just by virtue of coming into Klaviyo as opened email events and the fact that those kind of were already in our default attribution model. And from our conversations with customers, we found that there were kind of a wide range of opinions on what Klaviyo should do and what customers' expectations of Klaviyo were in light of those machine-driven opens. There were some customers who wanted to completely omit Apple privacy opens from claiming attribution, but to include opens from other quote-unquote legitimate sources that they knew were human-generated opens. There were other customers who only wanted click-based attribution to be reflected in Klaviyo, didn't care for opened email events to be counted in attribution at all. And then there was yet another set of customers who didn't care about attribution in Klaviyo at all because they were using a separate analytics suite and using tracking parameters in URLs to track click-based behavior. So basically from these customer segments, we deduced that not changing the default behavior, but rather providing that flexibility to determine what the best path was for your brand, it's kind of the optimal outcome to satisfy all parties. Not changing default behavior wouldn't confuse people for whom Apple Privacy Opens didn't really change their marketing strategy, and hopefully has provided kind of the robustness that our customers need to make their attribution choices.
On the side of some data science features, so Christina, I know that attribution matters quite a bit to some of the work that you've done at Klaviyo on the data science side. What complexities did the new world of attributions add for you specifically?
So luckily, Klaviyo randomizes customers between groups really well. So when we think of attribution, we think of data science, the primary area that that's a problem is for our experimentation features. So anything where you go out and do an experiment and then you really care, like, oh, was this purchase correlated to the difference in hero image I did in my email? Or putting the button in a different place, did that affect how customers converted? Or by asking for SMS versus not SMS, did that change anything? So you really need to tie the events you care about back to the experiment that you're running. So for a lot of our A/B testing features in emails or flows, opens are the winning metric that you care about. And when you make opens suddenly not so real, that really calls into question what you're experimenting on. Now, going back to why it's a really good thing Klaviyo does really good randomization, when we run an experiment in Klaviyo, every single experiment, we put people in the A group and the B group, and we send it out. Sometimes it's an ABC, sometimes it's ABCDE, like it goes, you can set up quite a few variations. But in any case, for every experiment, we do the randomization during that experiment, meaning all of our experiments are statistically independent from each other. Great. That means we're not systematically putting iPhone users or any type of user in one group versus another in an individual experiment, as well as doing a lot of experiments in a row. You don't always have the same people in the A group, same people in the B group. Not every email provider can say this. But in any case, Klaviyo, we can. Now, what this means is our iOS users get spread out across all of our groups evenly. So the data comes back. If you run an email test by open, your open rate won't be completely reliable. Maybe you're now measuring a 45% versus a 47% open rate. But because you can expect the same number of iOS garbage data, to use a very untechnical word, in each of those groups, the comparison is still valid. So the 47%, you probably had more opens in that group than the 45%. So because the bad data is spread out evenly and non-systematically, so there's no systematic bias, you can still run these experiments. It's just, it will take them a little longer to settle. It will take a larger sample size to make sure that you're actually measuring something, because it's obscuring the difference between the two groups. I can go into that a little bit more if we need to.
So this all points to a larger idea. What seems like a very specific technical change to a specific engineering process actually has implications far beyond that one area. So Akshay and Tom, you were also affected by iOS 15. Could you briefly describe how?
Sure. So one of the features our team owns is guided warming, and the iOS update had a big impact on this feature. I think to really understand why we were impacted, it's helpful to first know a bit about what guided warming is and how it depends on email open data under the hood. Let me start with that. For those in our audience that are unfamiliar with guided warming, it's a feature for accounts that are new to Klaviyo. As these accounts ramp up their sending, guided warming automatically excludes unengaged audiences from campaigns to optimize sends and maintain a healthy sender reputation. So guided warming uses open rate metrics in a couple of ways. The first is to determine who in an account are unengaged customers. So guided warming uses a variety of metrics like active on-site, clicks, and not surprisingly, email opens to build a segment containing the account's unengaged customers. The second is to dynamically select the timeframe used to calculate this unengaged audience. So for example, the unengaged audience could be customers who haven't engaged in the past 30 days or 60 days and so on. Depending on how far into the warming process an account is and what the open rates for the campaigns during the warming process have been. Guided warming computes a time frame and uses it to build the audience that should be excluded from Sense. This time frame is chosen such that email open rates stay optimal during the warming period. After Apple introduced these iOS changes, we started seeing inflated open rates. And so now guided warming wasn't as effective as it previously was because some of these email opens we were seeing weren't real opens by real humans. You could say that these higher open rates made the algorithm more optimistic. They gave guided warming the false impression that an account was further along in the warming process than it actually was, and would end up greenlighting larger sends that contained a larger percentage of unengaged customers and who ideally should have been excluded from the send. And so the criteria we use to calculate which customers are unengaged and the algorithm we use to select the time frame for the audience based on the performance of recent campaigns had to change to account for these elevated open rates.
Yeah, so kind of early on, as this was coming out, we were exploring a lot of different options, and it seemed like what would be best would just be ignore the machine opens and adjust these thresholds appropriately. So while that was sort of the ideal solution, as kind of Nader was talking about, the switch to iOS 15 in some sense happened overnight, but all the effects of that didn't happen overnight. And so there was a rollout where different ecosystem partners and within Klaviyo ourselves, you know, different aspects were updated at different times. So we had some information where we could track emails or opens back to machine opens, but not universally. And then sort of had a decision. We could kind of wait until we had all the information we needed to properly exclude machine opens, or we could try and do a sort of temporary solution to tide us over into that. To that point, ultimately, we decided we needed some sort of temporary solution because the risk to our sort of customers was too high if we didn't do anything. That risk being guided warming would encourage them to send to larger and larger audiences, which could hurt their deliverability. And so we then sort of explored options of what to do in the meantime. And what we came up with was just looking at the overall open rate we were seeing within Klaviyo and looking at how those were impacted by iOS. So we can look at historic open rates, and there's a graph, which maybe we'll share on the blog post, where there's pretty clear flat trend line, just we see, you know, about X percent open rate. And then once iOS 15 starts, you see a linear up and to the right in the open rates. So you just start to see over time open rates increase as people adopted iOS 15. So yeah, we could use this to update the thresholds so that the percentiles those thresholds corresponded to stay the same. So for instance, before, if your open rates were over a certain percentage, we would encourage you to send to more customers in guided warming. And that corresponded to, let's say, the 60th percentile of campaigns. So we wanted to keep that percentile the same so that our behavior for our customers was consistent. So that was sort of the base level approach. There were then some sort of technical details we had to work with. One important one, which was, I believe, brought to us by Nader, was that iOS adoption in the US versus the rest of the world, in particular Europe, is significantly different. So in the US, iOS is far more prevalent than it is elsewhere. And so there's going to be much more of an impact to our US-based customers than to other customers. So we had to make sure to split those out and to update the thresholds, you know, differently for each group. Another factor is that, so we did this analysis. We looked at, you know, how much we'd have to update the thresholds to accommodate iOS. One issue is that as soon as we had done that, in some sense, it was out of date because immediately after doing the analysis, 10 more people had upgraded their iOS and to iOS 15. And 10 seconds later, 10 more people had done it. So again, we had sort of some options of how to take that into account. What we settled on was, because we knew this wasn't our long-term solution, was looking at one, the adoption rate of previous versions of iOS. This is sort of information that you can find publicly, comparing that to the adoption rates for iOS 15 up to that point, and comparing that to the impact we had seen on open rates. And sort of combining all of those factors, you can sort of project out how much of increase you'll continue to see over the next, you know, month, 2 months. And we felt that was enough of a window where we could then start working on our more permanent solution. So all of that sort of got us to a point where we felt we were providing the service we needed for our customers We were giving them the best we could at the time and then working on what we felt was a sort of stronger solution of removing all machine opens once we were able to do that. So eventually we were given that capability, and then we had some similar issues of we had to update the thresholds. We had to incorporate US versus non-US, but a lot of similar problems that we had sort of solved previously, we were able to solve in this context as well.
Very interesting. It sounds like a complex multi-pronged approach there. And
that sounds like a really interesting problem. I think, you know, usually when something breaks, it breaks. But here it seems like there was a change made and then this really slow kind of progression of it becoming a problem and of it kind of like percolating throughout our customer base. Was there a point where iOS 15 adoption kind of plateaued? Like, what did that time scale look like from its initial release? You know, you said like every minute there are 10 more users. Was there a point where that kind of tapered off?
Yes, but that's happened after we got access to the full machine open data. So kind of while we were doing this sort of temporary solution that was looking at incorporating machine opens into the thresholds, it was a fairly consistent adoption rate. There was some tapering off near the end of it, but the sort of plateau that you eventually see wasn't until after that.
So hopefully by now, it's clear to everyone in the audience that when I introduced iOS 15 as this huge earth-shaking event, I wasn't overstating my case. I think it's important to note, though, this wasn't the end of the world for Klaviyo as a whole, or even for these specific features. Christina, I'll go ahead and start with you. How did you figure out how much impact iOS 15 would have, and how did you ultimately correct for it? And in that particular case, how did you weigh the mathematical needs against the customer-facing questions that you had to answer?
So the primary impact of the iOS 15 was customer-facing. Because we had an equal number of iOS users in each of the experimental variations, we weren't hugely concerned that the statistics were going to blow up. And then a lot of our methods have a self-correction in them. So like Smart Send Time adjusts over time, and it's a continuous process. So even if it takes longer for it to settle on an optimal send time, it's still going to settle on an optimal send time. So we were largely not hugely worried about the math not working out. We did some back of the envelope calculations, just double check, make sure that things were okay. But most of what we had to deal with was customer facing questions, because customers, they understand things pretty well, given that they often never taken a statistics class and they go, oh, wow, this iOS 15 thing, open rates are bad. Experiment goes open rates, therefore experiment bad. And that to a first degree, that's a great question to ask. Hey, now there's this new thing. Can I still trust your experimentation features? So a lot of the work that we did was working with the CSMs, all the customer facing folks, working with support and giving them the party line about, hey, we know it's, you see an open rate, it's not good anymore. But because the badness of the open rate is evenly spread across all your variations, the comparison is still valid. So there was a lot of working with various people who had customers of different degrees of, I don't accept that answer, something's clearly wrong here, and giving them the tools they needed to communicate back to their customers, some of which are some huge brands that really, really, really care about this kind of stuff. So a lot of it was working with the customer-facing folks and just finding the right way to talk about statistics with people who care about statistics but haven't necessarily ever taken a statistics class.
Speaking of back-of-the-envelope calculations, I think you had some math that you had prepared to briefly discuss here.
Yeah. So when you take some portion of your data, which is increasing over time as more and more people upgrade to the new OS, and you that effectively becomes terrible data, your effect sizes are going to shrink. So in our old world, we might be measuring a 10% open rate versus a 12% open rate. And if you have a large enough customer base, that will play out. And it's like, okay, that effect size can be measurable with a certain number of people in your audience. Yay, you know, that variation B with the 12% open rate did better. Now, if you take, you go to the world that we're getting closer and closer to, where we have 50% of people on your iOS 15, that effect size is going to shrink in half because half of your data is not so great. So you might be running a new experiment and now you're going to get something like 55% open rate versus a 56% open rate. that effect size has shrank from 2% to 1% because half of your data is 100% opens. And that's a lot harder to see when you go and try to measure for it. So you do need to, like, your power calculation is going to change given that you're measuring a much smaller effect size depending on how much of your email list is iOS 15. So if you are a company that sells exclusively iPhone cases, you're going to have a really, really, really hard time measuring anything. But if you're a company that sells exclusively Android phone cases, you might be a lot better off because most of your users will not be iOS. So depending on the percentage of your list that's iOS, you're going to see your effect sizes shrink over time.
If I understand what you're saying correctly, this is actually kind of a double whammy because both the effect size shrinking and being closer to 50% where you naturally have higher variance, both of those affect that power calculation.
Yeah, I think the more striking one here is the diminishing effect size. It makes it a lot harder to run multivariate tests. It makes it, it just makes it take longer to settle and know which change you made is the important one.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom and Akshay, you're up next. Your situation's obviously a little different since guided warming cares about open events in a different way than smart send time does. How did you ultimately, I guess in the final permanent solution, approach correcting for iOS 15?
So our final solution came down to excluding machine opens from open events for a campaign, and then appropriately adjusting the thresholds used in guided warming to account for that. So to go into maybe a little more detail there, when we're looking at in guided warming, we look at open rates, and at a high level, if you have good open rates, we encourage you to send more people. If you have low open rates, we encourage you to send to a more restricted, engaged audience. And so that open rate is sort of a number of customers who opened emails divided by the number of customers you sent to. So while we could remove customers with machine opens from both the customers who opened emails and those who received emails, that gets tricky because those customers could have also had genuine opens that we have data for. And you get into some extra complications there. And so what we ended up with is removing the open events from the open. So kind of removing those from open customers, but not from the total send. And so that will naturally decrease the open rates that we use in guided warming. And so we had to sort of push the thresholds down so to not, unjustly punish our customers for what were otherwise very, very good and successful email campaigns.
When we talked about this before, it sounded like some of the response was also aimed internally rather than directly at the end user, the end customer. What did that part of the response look like?
Yeah, so while we were pulling in all this data and seeing what open rates looked like before iOS 15, looked like after iOS 15, would look like if we excluded machine opens, we realized that this was going to have a pretty big impact on our customer support team. When they're helping our customers, they need to know what sort of open rates they should expect to see, what are sort of high open rates, what are low open rates. And so while we were kind of doing this analysis, we thought it made sense to add a little bit in for them just to say, hey, here's the impact we're seeing. Here's the impact we expect to see moving forward, to sort of arm them with a little more information. And so we were able to help out, I guess, an internal customer in that case, and hopefully help our end customer as part of the work we were doing.
I want to end by taking a step back. We've gone deep into specific responses to a specific problem that arose at a specific time. But the real reason that we wanted to have this conversation is to highlight the skills and the mindset needed to do this sort of research. If you had to give one piece of advice to someone who finds themselves in a similar situation to where you were with iOS 15 in the future, what would you say?
What I would carry with me to any such kind of decision-making around a data change like this in the future would be first to just cast a wide net, both with internal stakeholders that you chat with, as well as customers or external stakeholders. When there's a change like this, there's a big kind of, it can be kind of self-driven, a pressure to feel like you have to be first, or it can be kind of something that's prescribed that we have to get to market with something fast. And that was kind of the biggest thing that I came out of this with, is that like being first doesn't really matter if what you're delivering isn't the right solution for your customers. So for a lot of reasons, I was super thankful to have Tricia in the Apple Privacy Working Group with us, but especially so during our research and solutioning phase. Because oftentimes when we'd have a conversation with a customer and we'd hear a particularly strong opinion or thought as to what Klaviyo should do in handling iOS 15, Trisha was oftentimes very much a voice of reason in reminding us that, you know, the impact that this could have on that one customer or what that one customer segment might want to see might have, you know, unintended impacts on the rest of our customer segments. So the balance to strike was pretty delicate, and I'm definitely, in hindsight, proud of the way we kind of released, delivered a feature set that was robust enough for our very sophisticated customers to get value out of it and be able to augment their marketing programs accordingly, but also one that didn't necessarily add undue stress or confusion for the other end of our customer segments. Yeah, I can throw it over to Trisha to get her thoughts and see if I missed anything there.
I think the only thing that I would add is also taking on multiple lens approach here. I think Nader and I spent a lot of time talking with the rest of the folks in the privacy group about second and third order effects, especially for, in this case, what could be like a very sensitive topic. We know that customer privacy or consumer privacy is becoming more and more of a forefront on everyone's mind. So we also wanted to make sure that we were still respecting kind of the intent of what Apple was trying to do in terms of providing their end users more control about how their data was used. And we know that's a very important topic that we always want to stay abreast of. So we also really had to kind of think a little bit further ahead as to, you know, what any changes that we're making now could possibly mean in the future and how that would be interpreted by multiple groups, not just our customers, not just Apple, but anybody else who, you know, who was really focused on this particular change.
So I think for me, the main thing is the mindset while solving these problems. So from a data science side, while I'm working on a specific feature that we need to update, for something like this that was pretty new, there wasn't like a lot of data to compare it to previously. There were a lot of questions in both, should we incorporate this and how best to incorporate it, that didn't really have right or wrong answers. And there was a lot of minor technical decisions that came up as well. And for all of those, just going back to sort of, you know, what would be the most helpful to our customers then allowed us to answer a lot of those questions. Whereas otherwise, from like a math perspective, there isn't a clear, oh yeah, this is the right distribution to use, or, oh, this is provably correct, or anything along those lines. It was much more of a, if I were using Klaviyo, what would I want to see here? And that allowed us to, I think, answer a lot of questions that otherwise would have been very difficult to answer.
So one of the big takeaways for me in looking at how many teams that this change could affect was to make sure that the right people were in the room at the right time. So in our immediate response, we didn't want to get everybody, the predictive analytics experiments team, the research team, the team who currently owns Smart Send Time, which was not the experiments team at the time. We didn't want to throw a representative from each of those teams into the primary response group all at once, because that would just be too many voices all at once. We wanted to make sure we understood the impact, and then we could propagate that out to all the teams that would be affected. So when one of these big changes happens, my biggest takeaway would be figure out who the most relevant people are at each step of the response and make sure they are in the conversation or informed that the conversation is happening. So that way they know, hey, you know, experiments is going to be affected by this. I don't need to be in the initial response because the initial response team will give me the information that I need to make the correct decisions about my area.
And that is all the time we have this month. I want to thank all of our panel for being on the episode today. I learned a lot, honestly. Not all of this was stuff I knew before. So thank all of you for going into this into so much depth. I hope everyone in the audience learned just as much as I did. So thank you all for being on. This episode, as all episodes of the Klaviyo Data Science podcast are, was sponsored by Klaviyo. Klaviyo is a unified customer platform for email, SMS, and more, and empowers online brands to own their data and grow on their own terms. If you liked what you heard on this episode, I would like to suggest subscribing to the Klaviyo Data Science podcast. I would also like to suggest leaving us a rating, a thumbs up, a review. All of those matter. They help more people see the Klaviyo Data Science podcast and hear more content like the content you just heard in the future, because they boost us in the algorithm. In addition, it also is just nice to get reviews and to see people enjoying the podcast. It helps me and Zach out. Another good way to make sure that other people hear about things like you just heard is to share it directly with them. If you know someone who you think would be interested in hearing more about iOS 15, maybe they work in the area, maybe it's something you've talked about before, maybe they're just interested in how data privacy impacts people who are working in data science, feel free to share this episode directly with them. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, the best person to reach is me. The best place to reach me is my Twitter account. That's Lawson_M_T. Thanks for listening. Have a great month.